welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, I'm linking up with a lady who, to me, stands out. She's bold, inspirational, and doesn't give up with what anyone thinks. Would you run a marathon in anything but a bra and pants? Because she has, to crush stigma around body image and confidence. She speaks loudly and proudly about mental health, and that has resonated with thousands of other women who share the same struggles. She's a journalist, author, broadcaster, and podcaster. B. I love how I've just decided to call you B.
B. Oh, you can call me B. That is what my friends do call me.
Bryony Gordon. Yeah. Welcome.
No, but they don't call me Bryony Gordon. They go, hello, oi, B. They can't be asked to say Bryony because it's one, two, three syllables.
Yeah, it's quite a lot, actually. When we did the coffee order, I was like, Amy.
No, I don't. That whenever they say, what coffee do you want? What's your name for the coffee? I'm like, it's B.
Yeah.
And, and then they write like Bumblebee.
But I feel like you suit B. You're like,
I do. And I do. And I love a B. Like my mum only buys me Bumblebee themed gifts.
Is that why you have Bumblebee shoes on this morning?
I can't help it. Now it's just auto. I'm on autopilot. I'd love it if Bumblebees had pink stripes.
Yeah, they're cool. I actually want to get those.
They are very understated.
Very cool. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's nice to be here having a walk. I haven't done much exercise in the last week because just stuff has been going on.
Life
and life terms.
Do divulge.
Well, no, just very tedious, boring stuff. And I realised, you know, I was thinking about this because I'm usually quite good on keeping up my exercise because it's so good for my head.
Yeah.
Not because of the way it makes me look, but the way it makes me feel. That sometimes life gets in the way and my brain's instinct is to like beat me up.
Oh, no.
No, but you know what I mean? And go, yeah. Oh, you've been lazy this week. And then I kind of go, no, this is fine. It's just, you know.
How do you find that? Because I can definitely relate to that. Last week, I had a mental week and it's like job to job to job, juggling other elements of your life. And some days you do just wake up and you're like, I actually can't do it today.
Yeah. I think that's fine. And I've got much better at like not beating myself up for that. I think also it's really important to stop, Amy, because we are, you know, like I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic and I'm in recovery. So I don't drink anymore. I don't take drugs. I don't smoke. You know, I try not to lose myself in food. But the one thing that I'm properly addicted to and I really need to kind of pull myself up on is like busyness. Okay. And work and like validating myself through I'm busy, I'm needed, you know, and then I'm okay. And what happens when we stop, like for a moment?
Then it's quite hard because
yeah.
There is no one pulling you or a desire to yeah. be doing something.
And we all go, oh God, I wish I had some time to myself. But actually, I think lots of us are quite frightened of time to ourselves.
I will put my hand up now and say, I am.
Yeah.
I love to be busy. I love seeing people. And I also love exercising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it gives a huge sense of purpose and fulfillment.
Yeah. And also it does release those sort of chemicals that
make you happy.
I mean, I do think people often say to me, do you think you've replaced addiction to alcohol with like addiction to running things in your pants? And I'm like, they're just not the same because addiction to alcohol has like landed me in some pretty dark places, like crack dens and things. But running, the darkest place I found myself in is like that tunnel at mile 15 of the London Marathon, you know.
Oh yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's dark, but it's, you know, like there is light at the end of it.
You can actually see the end after you've been in it for about a minute.
Yeah, and even
if you walk through it, the good thing is nobody can see that you're walking, so it
you
really doesn't
you want
matter.
To speed up. It is a bit like that scene in, was it 28 Days Later, when the zombies come running for you.
So when you've been out on a casual jog around Battersea Park, you've not found yourself in a crack den afterwards?
No. So, I don't think there are many crack dens around Battersea Park, but...
Do you reckon?
I'm sure
there's a grotto somewhere.
There will be something. I'm not going to go into that. I did once go for a run and bump into some people. Let's put it that way. Some people...
Hey, people.
Being amorous together.
Like sort of doing dodgy things.
I wouldn't call it dodgy. I just think it was something that probably you should do in the privacy of your own home.
Ah, yes, just not out in public.
In your bedroom,
yeah,
you know?
But yeah,
like, but I don't want to like judge anyone's like sexual predilections.
We're very open on this podcast. We're open to all, but we'll leave it there for today. So your addiction, obviously, has stemmed through a few different pillars.
Yeah.
Would you say addiction can be a positive thing?
I mean, I think what I would say is that it is a thing, right? And so if you can accept that you have a problem,
yeah,
and you can get help for it, and you can channel it, and you accept who you are, and you stop trying not to be the person, do you know what I mean? And you kind of like put it to a better, okay, not articulating myself very well, then yes, it can be positive. Like, I think everything is the experience of being in the depths of addiction, and no, it's horrible, but I think all negative things can be turned into positives as much as possible. And I think for me, the route to dealing with addiction is accepting life in all of its glorious technicolor. You know, for me, a lot of addiction has been about numbing feelings and numbing bad times and being like, I can't deal with pain. I can't deal with the way this is making me feel. So I'm going to pick up a drink, or I'm going to pick up a drug, or I'm going to pick up a cigarette, or, you know, whatever it is.
All of those three things you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Would you say you were addicted to those three things?
Yeah. And I would say I'm still like, and but then I think what happens is like when you deal with addiction, it's about learning to feel those feelings. Yes, I was definitely addicted to alcohol. I was definitely addicted to cocaine, and I was definitely addicted to cigarettes. Oh my God, there's a person on a Penny Farthing.
Penny Farthing.
Very impressive.
We love your bike. Very
it.
Cool. Do you reckon I could get on the back? He's got a parking notice.
I think he's using it as a escape.
A banterous.
A banterous.
A bit of a banterous.
He looks a bit annoyed that we'd like noticed it.
Yeah.
Like his, and I'm like, if you're riding through central London on a penny farthing.
I'm pretty sure you're not even allowed to ride bikes here anyway.
Anyway.
Three pillars, addiction.
Yeah.
Those three substances. You said numbing pain.
Mm.
When you're at that point, effectively, you've lost control. Is that the correct word?
Yeah, but also I don't think it's just numbing. It's not just pain that I was numbing. It was also like, it was any feeling whatsoever. I think even happiness could be, it was like too much. I think a lot of us grow up in this country in particular with that sense of like, don't feel. Like I remember my, you know, parents would be like, don't cry or don't be silly or whatever. Yeah. And we kind of learn not
to put the emotions to the side.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're lucky, you're given a sort of emotional toolkit to deal with life's shit times.
Is there a point during your journey with addiction where, for those people that are listening, that maybe haven't recognized it or accepted their addiction to something?
Yeah.
That really stands out to you, because obviously we all have addictive tendencies.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say I've got quite an addictive personality. Like if I like something, I'm all in. And I'm just lucky that for me, it hasn't been alcohol.
It's been snowboarding.
It was snowboarding.
Well, exercise.
And that led to a fantastic career. But I can imagine at the point where you recognize it, it must feel like you're just in a lost vortex.
Well, I think for lots of people, you know, that we know that one of the like the biggest symptoms of addiction is denying that you have a problem, you know, it's denial. And I definitely think that I remember when I had my daughter, when I was pregnant, it simply didn't occur to me that I would continue to drink once I had my child, you know, in the way that I had before. And I remember 2 weeks after my daughter was born, as soon as I was like physically well enough, I just desperately wanted to get pissed, to get drunk. And I remember going to the pub, and I think my mum came and looked after her. I remember being so, it was like such a horrible realization. I was like, oh my God, I've got everything I ever wanted, you know, and everything I was told is perfect. So, you know, husband, baby, flat, bugaboo, you know, all of that.
It's all like ticked off. If there was an idyllic vision on life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're and box ticking.
Yeah, and none of it. And still, I can't stop drinking like this. And it was such a horrifying realization that I just kind of buried it.
Can I ask what like this means? Because I struggle to connect to it because I haven't been there.
Yeah.
What does it look like?
Part of my denial was that I had this very fixed view of what addiction was, which was like an old man on a park bench drinking all day. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, well, I don't do that. I had all these things. I was like, well, I don't wake up and drink. I don't drink every day. I wait till my child is in bed to have a drink. So I can't be an alcoholic, you know. And also I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I never want to drink again. Like, I'm so horrified. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I was like, surely alcoholics want to drink all the time. I had all these misconceptions. And then eventually I realized that all of these kind of rules I had around alcohol meant it was actually kind of ruling me. And it didn't really matter.
The word wait, even. You said I'd wait till my daughter was in bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whereas some people will be like, well, you just not have a drink.
Yeah.
You just get on with your life. But this is the thing. I still think like an alcoholic. It's been over 7 years since I had a drink, but I still think like an alcoholic.
So you drank nothing in 7 years?
Nothing, no.
Wow.
Yeah. But it didn't matter that I didn't drink during the day or that because I was thinking about drinking all the time. I was like, my whole life was kind of structured around it. Like, oh, I've got this work thing on that night, so it means I can't get drunk the night before. Didn't mean I wouldn't, but do you know what I mean? It was like, oh, so the night before I have to have a... On the face of it, I didn't look like an alcoholic, but I was. And yes, I haven't had a drink for over 7 years.
That's crazy. That's such like a hard line also to stop something.
Well, it's genuinely easier for me not to have a drink than to, like, my husband always used to be like, why can't you just have one or two? And I'd be like, why can't you just fuck off? Because the idea of one or two is...
I'd rather not bother.
Oh my God. Yeah, like, it just is hideous. Like, I have no interest in... It is just easier. And I got to a stage where I was like, if I don't stop drinking, I'm going to die. And I'm either going to die by falling down some stairs one night or choking on my own vomit.
That's
or
scary.
I'm going to die by choosing to take my own life, because suicidal ideation was a pretty much day-to-day makeup of my hangovers, basically. Or even worse of all, actually, I was going to die by continuing to live in this sort of like Groundhog Day existence where every morning I woke up and I was like, what have I done? Who have I called? What have what do I need? Checking things and the shame and never again, never again, never again, until about 4 o'clock when I was like, maybe I'll have a drink tonight, you know? So I was like, I either have to do something to change this or accept that this is how it's going to be. And, you know, I had a 4-year-old daughter and I was like, I need to get help. So I went to rehab and that was the best thing I'd ever done. But like, also I would say for people listening who are like, oh, my life will end if I, you know, like, they think that accepting you have a problem is like the end of your life and you're going to be punished for it.
How did you accept it?
I don't know. Like, it's so different for lots of people, but, you know, you have to go as low as you have to go.
Wow.
So it's visible that, like, you have no control over this. And, you know, it's different for everyone. And what I would say is that if someone's listening, you know, when I got sober, Amy, when I chose to make the decision, on the surface, my life, it was probably the most successful it had ever been. Like, that year, I'd had a number one Sunday Times bestseller. I'd run a marathon. I'd interviewed Prince Harry on my podcast.
Your
past. Oh, no, that was the next year.
Okay,
I did it in my
gosh.
Past. People were like handing me awards. Do you know what I mean? Left, right, and center. And I was like a mess. And so what I would say is, you know, when I was like, I haven't lost everything. And I remember someone saying to me, well, do you need to wait until you've lost everything to get help? Because addiction is a lift going down, right? And you can choose to get off at any floor you want. But if you get back on it, you will go lower. And so I'd had a couple of attempts at getting sober. And every time I was like, if I pick up a drink, I know that whatever stops me from drinking the next time will be worse than the thing before. The things were starting to get quite bad, quite sordid, quite seedy. And I was like, I don't want to know what the next rock bottom is. It could be death.
Isn't it wild how at that point you're at the highest point visually?
Yeah.
Also, the ability we have as humans to mask the pain we feel inside.
Yeah.
That's where we are bizarrely quite clever creatures, because more often than not, you hear those that are really struggling, you wouldn't have a clue. And that's scary.
No, and I think it's really important to remember, because also I think if someone's listening and they happen to be in this deep, dark chasm inwardly that no one can see, and they think I'm the worst person in the world, because that was the kind of narrative that looped around my head, that there was nobody else behaving like this and I was really bad and I kind of deserved to die, you know, I deserve to be punished. And
do you believe that though? Because that's...
Well, I don't believe that now, but... At the time, I was like, I am the worst person in the world. And if I admit all of this to someone, they are going to be like, okay, you're really bad. You just deserve to lose everything you love. And now I see, you know, I went into recovery and I went into rehab. And the first person I met was another mum who was same age as me, same sobriety date as me, kid the same age as me, who'd been doing exactly the same shit 1 mile down the road.
No way.
You know, to this day, me and Holly are still like really good friends. And, you know, I realized, I was like, fuck, you know, I met all these people who had behaved, if not exactly the same way as me, then in very similar ways to me. And I was like, oh no, I'm not a bad person. I'm just an ill person who sometimes does bad things because of that illness.
And that illness being the addiction.
Alcoholism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was by far the most kind of healing thing. I remember in rehab, one of the counselors saying to me, you know, shame dies when you expose it to the light. And it does. You say this shit out loud and then it doesn't have as much power over you. And I think that's the case with all mental illnesses, you know, whatever that might happen to be. All mental illnesses work by isolating you. They tell you you're a freak and they tell you that you're alone and they tell you that no one's going to understand what you're going through. And they tell you that, you know, not just that you're alone, but that you need to be alone and isolate because that's where they can thrive.
It is so, so scary, that feeling of isolation. You use the word light. You're definitely thriving in the light right now. 7 years later, talk to me about your, can we call it positive addiction? With running and some of the phenomenal things you've done, like running in your pants. First of all, how did you survive
the chafe?
The chafe, because like after the New York Marathon last year, I wasn't doing it in my pants. I couldn't even walk down the stairs.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so, well, that's just like, these are just like rookie errors that are actually really easy to address. If you have something like Body Glide or Mega Babe and you just rub it on and you're good to go.
Okay, wow.
But you do, like if you're doing a long distance, like marathon, you do obviously have to stop and reapply quite regularly.
That is very useful information.
Yeah.
Because I think people wouldn't realise that.
Always have some on you when you're doing a long run. Literally, I posted a reel the other day. I ran like a 10K around London in my pants and a lot of the questions were like, how do you, you know, my thighs are burning just watching this. And I'm like, I've worked it out. You don't need to like worry about my thighs. And then I realized actually they just don't have any idea about all these anti-chafe things out there. So,
right.
And then.
This is very useful information.
Yeah. And I also get it around my boobs because my boobs are like a J cup.
A J?
Yeah. And so it's like I'm doing a really long run, like above 10K.
Yeah.
I have to wear a wired bra because otherwise the boobs are just going to go. And even then they're not, you know, it's very difficult.
It's almost like you need to like tape them down, no?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. But I've also got used to the fact like lots of people are often like, they explain my own body to me and they're like, your sports bra is not supportive enough. And I'm like, are you my boobs? Because I know I have tried every sports bra and they're like, this is why I do what I do, Amy, because we are so unused to seeing women's bodies in the wild that have not been edited or photoshopped or filtered in any way that we don't actually know what women's bodies look like when they move.
No.
And if you have boobs that are over a, you know, a D cup or a C cup or whatever, and they are real, by which I mean they're not cosmetically altered. If your body moves, your boobs move with them. It's like, and this like literally blows people's minds because they are.
They've never seen it.
You know, since Pamela Anderson ran on a beach, you know, they don't get it. And so I spend half my time kind of explaining to people, I don't need a more supportive sports bra. Thanks for your concern. But this is as supportive as it gets.
And they move.
They move. And I'm fine. And I'm used to it. Like, my boobs have been large since I... Not since I was born, obviously, that's weird. But, like, since teenagedom. And so I do it on behalf of, obviously, of larger women who aren't represented. And we don't see as many, you know,
in the
out
sphere
exercising
of the internet.
Yeah, fitness sphere as well.
Yeah.
But also actually just for women generally, because you know, we ourselves don't see these things. So when we see our own bodies move in that way, we think that we're somehow doing it wrong or shouldn't be out there visibly doing it. And you know, that's why I do what I do. It isn't for like attention or, you know, as some people think or, you know, love to message me to say. It's because I hate the idea of any woman or man sitting at home and thinking, I'd really like to run a 5K. I'd really like to do park run. I'd really like to do couch to 5K. One day I'd really like to do a half marathon or a marathon or whatever it is. It could be anything. It could be swimming. It could be tennis. It could be any old thing. You know, I hate the idea of them then because of societal pressures or this kind of bullshit patriarchal sort of diktats that say you have to look a certain way or be a certain way to do something publicly, that they don't do it, you know? And like, no, everyone deserves to move their body, however their body looks. And I also have to explain to people that I'm not advocating for a certain way. I'm not saying being fat is good or being this size is good or it's better than any other size. I'm just saying that whatever size I am allowed to exist as I am. And my value as a human being does not alter if I lose weight or I gain weight or I'm, you know, if I'm a size 8 or I'm
that
a size
really
28. sorry. But do you know what I mean? And so like people, you know, people still have, they can't understand what it's about, you know. Like, get people off and they're like, oh, you've lost a bit of weight, you know, does that mean you're rejecting body positivity? And I'm like, no, what it means is I got diagnosed with a fucking arrhythmia a year ago and I'm on some medication that means I can't, do you know what I mean? Like, that's all it means.
It doesn't mean anything.
I'm not inherently a better person now because I've lost one stone than I was 6 months ago. Do you know what I mean? You know, and if I put that stone back on, that doesn't mean in the stone's time. I'm going to be a less valuable person. And it's like, stop obsessing over women's bodies. And I get that it is a bit odd as a woman who runs around in her underwear to go, stop obsessing about women's bodies. Because it's like, well, you are sort of like jiggling it in our face, Bryony. But like, what I mean is it's going like, we just have a right to exist however we want to. It's like Cher said, if I chopped my boobs off and had them put on my back, it would be none of your goddamn business. And she's right. Like, the fight is always for women to have autonomy over their bodies without other people sticking their fucking noses in.
You are so brave because...
I'm wondering, do you know what? Maybe I should get them taken off, surgically removed and put on my back.
Maybe. Maybe. There's less chance of them then hitting your face.
That's
no?
true. I just think I wouldn't be used to the dynamics
yeah,
of it.
You may be a bit off balance. Yeah. Boobs on your back. That's definitely one I've not seen yet. There's always a first for something.
There is.
You heard it here.
Yeah.
Where did you get that innate confidence from? To be able to stand for that and make the changes you have done, because that's really something in itself.
I don't know if I have confidence. I always say this, Amy, like, confidence is a bit of a trick. Like, we're sold this as well as women, like, get body confidence. And it's like, oh, thanks for that. I don't have confidence, but what I do have, like, I have, you know, I think it's really important to say that, like, I have the same thoughts about my body as everyone else, you know, does about theirs. So I don't have confidence, but what I do have is a desire not to spend any more energy than I need to hating on my body. Because it's just like, what's the fucking point?
That's the key. And that's what people need to hear. You know, no matter what shape or size you are, it's energy, mental energy consumed on the worry of, should I eat this? Should I eat that? Yeah. Should I wear this because I look bad in that?
I just think, you know, like, with everything has to pass the nourish or punish test, right? Does this thought, thing, whatever, nourish me or does it punish me? If it nourishes me, great, it can come into my brain. If it punishes me, just like, let's not waste too much time on it. Right now, here we are in London and we are fucking lucky to be up and moving and walking
it's
as we want
such
around
a
this,
gift.
This mad Buddha. There are people right now who can't do that. They can't do that because they're unwell. For whatever reason, they don't have that freedom and their bodies have given them something shit. I just think to myself, life is genuinely too short. I don't want to spend any more of it regretting things because I've already spent quite a lot of my life regretting shit. Do you know what I mean? I just know how precious it is and how fleeting it is.
You use the word nourish.
Yeah.
What's nourishing you right now in
this
life?
Coffee. This walk. What's this nourishing walk me right now? Good question. Grey's Anatomy.
I love it. The simplistic things in life.
I think all of life's greatest lessons can be learnt through the first 11 seasons of Grey's Anatomy.
I've not watched it. Is that my cue to...
Gotta watch it.
Yeah.
But there's a man praying to Buddha there. I find that quite a nourishing and moving thing because I'm not religious at all, but I find sort of connecting with things that are bigger than me out there really important, whether it's the weather or nature or that sense that life isn't just rushing around in a meaningless void.
Yeah.
So anyway, God, that was a bit...
Yeah,
Grey's Anatomy, spirituality, they're the same thing, basically.
They are, aren't they? I mean,
exercise, reading, I love reading.
Let's tap into the exercise and go back to the running. Yeah. Would you say you're addicted to running?
No, I wouldn't say I was addicted to running because I have to force myself to do it. But I have this saying, which is like, nobody really wants to go for a run, but no one ever regrets it.
Yeah, that's so true.
Unless they break their leg or something. So
how did you turn your hand to running?
Sort of out of desperation. So, you know, I have suffered from obsessive compulsive disorder and depression since I was a little girl, really. And I just needed to change the way I feel in a way that didn't involve drugs or alcohol, basically. Someone had said, try running. And I was like, oh, okay. I remember my first run. I was like wearing Converse All-Stars.
Yes, the Converse All-Stars. I'm ready.
And like a Star Wars t-shirt. And I was like, if I don't go out with like water, I'm going to die. But all I had to carry the water in was like one of my daughter's like sippy cups.
Oh, no.
But that was the kind of start of it. The other thing is that to me, exercise had been sort of displayed to me as you needed to get faster in it. You needed to get better in it. You needed to be the strongest, the fastest, the whatever. And actually, that's a really off-putting thing. So for me, when I twisted it around and I was like, actually, exercise is for the kind of the gains, not the losses.
Yeah.
That really changed it. So I don't obsess about pace or anything like that. I'm not... Look at my kilometer splits.
Hey, you should check out my Strava splits.
Yeah.
Bro, I did like...
negative, was it? Negative splits. Like, my husband's fucking hilarious.
I did that once and I didn't even know what it is. Everyone was like, you did negative splits. I'm like... I think am I getting negatively slower?
No,
you got faster.
I think that happens to a lot of people because they're just so desperate to get to the finish line.
Yeah. The last bit. You're like, put the foot down, let's hammer it home. I can see the line.
Let's get to the burger. I don't obsess about that. I do it for like the time in my head and, you know, listening. I like to just listen to things.
What sort of stuff are you vibing to on your little trots?
I listen to a lot of like musicals.
Do you?
A lot of like Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's interesting.
And I fantasize that I'm like, okay, so this is out there.
Okay, I'm ready.
Possibly the most embarrassing thing I've ever admitted, and I've admitted quite a lot of things.
Okay, all right, boom, stand ground, I'm ready.
So in my fantasy when I'm running, I've got to musicals week or Strictly.
No way, you've made it. What week is that?
I don't know, it's like quite a good week to get to.
Is it?
Yeah.
I reckon you should find out which week it is.
I think it's like week 8 or something.
Oh, yeah,
it's
you've gone past. Is that past Blackpool?
Maybe it's just before Blackpool. I don't know. Okay. But it's musicals week.
Right.
And Craig or someone's off because he's got COVID. So
brilliant. Get rid.
So the guest judge is Lin-Manuel Miranda.
No way.
Yeah. And I dance with... Johannes, it's got to be Johannes.
Yeah? Only him? Any second option backup?
I mean, Katja, anyone. Anyone. That's a bit rude. Johannes, I think in my fantasy...
Johannes or another woman?
It's Johannes. Yeah. No, or... I mean, I don't even know who's still in it because... Anyway, but so
you weren't watching last week?
I obviously watched the clips of Pete Wicks.
Did you enjoy that?
Doing George of the Jungle. I do. I thought that was awesome. I'm Team Wicks.
Are you?
Firmly. Anyway, in my fantasy, Pete Wicks does not figure yet, but maybe I need to put him in there.
No, he's already knocked out the competition. You're still in it at this point, right?
Yeah, it's just me, basically. And I dance to Burn from Hamilton.
Okay.
And
can we hear that? Can you like express it? Because I don't know the song.
So it's like, I'm erasing myself from the narrative. Let future historians wonder how Eliza reacted when you broke her heart. You've torn it all apart. Stand back, watch it. But anyway.
What dance do you do?
I don't know, like, it might be...
Is it salsa?
It's couple's choice.
So it's freestyle.
So Johannes is, like, freestyling up.
Were you rolling around on the floor? Little teddy bear roll?
He definitely picks me up.
Does it?
And swirls
me
around.
Should we try and reenact it?
No. No, I don't want to.
I can be Johannes.
I don't want to injure you. And they're just like, girl, you slay. And Lynn's like, come and be in one of my musicals. And that's how I go from being like journalist and underwear runner to musical superstar.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Isn't it insane?
I'm putting it out there into the universe now.
That is like the biggest manifestation, yet also the power that we have with our brains when we have that time alone to take us to that place. Mm-hmm. It's such, I find, I'll go out on these runs and there's clarity as you run. Like, okay, the first mile.
There's clarity on who you're gonna dance with. In Strictly.
I wonder who I should go for.
You probably would have to go for Katja because you're friends, aren't you?
Yeah, that would be a disaster for
our friendship.
I think it would
be fucking hilarious.
No, she'd absolutely whip me into shape and I'd be like, mate, don't tell me what to do.
I think it would be great. I want to see it. You would bring, like, it would be girls representing. It would be just, you know,
we would slay vibes.
You would slay the vibe and you would whip.
I think she'd prefer to dance with a man, but you know.
I think we need to be open.
We must be open. But yeah, the mental health element of running is just huge. How would you describe that post-run high for you? That feeling?
Oh, it's so nice, isn't it? It's just like, proud of myself.
It's a little one of these, isn't it?
Glad I did that, you know, because I could have not done that and my brain wanted me not to do that. My brain instinctively, Amy, wants the worst for me. It wants me to stay in the crack den of my mind, yeah, and not get out and see the beautiful world and how it's turning. I've accepted that. Like, I wake up every morning and my first thought is, oh, fuck no.
That's what do you mean?
Just like, I'm awake. It's a day. I've got to
live.
I've got to live and I don't know how to do that. And I'm horribly ill-equipped and, you know, and the
but
world.
You're not.
I know, but this is the brain. Wow. And I'm sure this resonates with a lot of people. I have to like do what I can very quickly to overturn brain and go, no, brain, that's not the case. You can do this. So for me, running is a really easy way to do that.
So that would be one simple hack to anyone,
yeah,
feeling the same, to get outside and shift your body.
I had a period last year where I used CrossFit instead of running.
Ooh.
Which
Ooh. That's a bit hard.
I loved it.
I'm not too
Ooh. That was like mega endorphins. That's what running
That's
does for me. And but I also like I have had periods, so like I was training for something, I was trying to do something earlier this year, which was run the Brighton Marathon and then run from Brighton to London and then run the London Marathon. And I kind of definitely bit off more than I could chew, not so much in the running, but I had so many other things going on. Like I had a book coming out, I was moving job. You know, there was just a lot going
on. Big new job.
I was a columnist at the Telegraph and now I'm a columnist at the Mail, writing about mental health stuff. But there was a lot going on, right? It was like, you know, like when you're training for something, and essentially what I was training for was an ultra, you need to be able to give all of your time to do that, right?
I didn't know you did an ultra.
No, I didn't do the ultra because I got to tapering and I got a stress fracture.
No!
On my shin. And that was a really big lesson of like, and I knew like weeks before that I was just really tired, and you know, and it, I was having to do like 4 miles on a Saturday, 15 miles on a Sunday, another 5 miles on a Monday, and I knew I was really tired, and I was like, this is like wading through treacle. This isn't not that something like that shouldn't feel easy, obviously,
no.
But you know, you want to be like, oh yeah, I can feel the progression, and I couldn't feel the progression. I actually could feel myself like slipping backwards, and that was a real lesson of like, listen to your body, don't dismiss yourself. Like I think, as a woman, my, you know, instinctive reaction is to dismiss anything that I think or feel. Do you know what I mean? And go, come on, carry on, you know, get on with it.
It's not the time to do it, right? And that's where it is so important to listen to yourself to a degree. Maybe your mind's telling you no, and sometimes we do need to push through,
it's
right?
It's different. It's so difficult when you have a history of mental illness to work out which thing do I need to listen to and which voice do I need to like just go, no, Bryony.
Yeah.
You know, like it's very difficult to work that out, but I have got better at it. Like on Friday, I had a festival thing and I was like, I just didn't feel I could do it.
It sounds like you had a mental weekend. You do have a lot of different strands running, from your fitness, your books, your column, you're a mum. There's a multitude of pillars and I've not even covered all of them. As we're on the Monday Mile podcast, we like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday.
Oh.
Do you like a Monday when you've had the catastrophe of the weekend you've just had?
Yeah, I've just had a mad weekend of like hundreds of children like running around, which was lovely as well. So, you know, on a Monday like this, when I have this to do, I like, but essentially Mondays are when my brain is at its strongest.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, like the bad bit of the brain.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't like Mondays. I'm not a good Monday person.
Okay, interesting.
Mondays make me go, even when I'm on holiday.
How do you turn that narrative around to get up on a Monday?
I go easy on myself. I try not to book too many things in on a Monday morning because otherwise I will start the week in like total panic and just wanting to pull out of everything. So gentle, but having something.
Nice.
And like, let's ease into the week. Let's do a bit of movement. That sounds very indulgent, do you know what I mean? And just breathe and have that episode of Grey's Anatomy planned for the Monday evening.
Have we felt that morning? Have we felt that Monday morning breath today? I can smell croissants, coffee,
yep.
And I think another coffee calling.
Yeah, so I think not too much coffee though. This is my third coffee, so we...
Oh, I'm only on two. Brilliant. I can get another one in. I'm more like a 3 before 12 girl. And lastly, Bryony, yes. We like to ask all of our guests if they have a life motto or quote that they live by.
Oh, yes. Okay. You are not your thoughts. You're just the person that hears them.
Oh, so strong. Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Do make sure you are subscribed to the audio. It drops every single Monday morning at 12 a.m. for the early risers. And if you don't fancy a hardcore run, you know what to do. Tune in and join us for a walk whilst you listen. Monday Mile, B, it's been an absolute privilege.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for taking me out. Thanks for walking me.
Yeah, do you want to know how far we've gone?
I've got it on my thing. Hang on. We've been running. Walking. Oh, I can't.
We've gone for 1.7 of a mile. Almost 2 miles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it'll be two by the time we get back to camp.
3.28
kilometres. One of our listeners, it is a wrap.